the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast is just two guys and maybe a guest or two discussing Bitcoin, Bitcoin equities, and the related macroeconomic space. It's not meant to be financial advice, so please, if you're doing any investing after listening to our program, do your own research, do your own due diligence, and understand that any money you invest can be lost. The show is meant for entertainment purposes only, and we hope you enjoy the program. Friends and enemies, welcome to the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast, where the price of Bitcoin and the backdrops never change. My name is Joey. I'm here with my co-host Len from Parts Unknown. Brother, how you doing? Great to see you. I see the chat's busy already. We got a lot of people here to start the show. So don't say anything you wouldn't say in front of your mother. Go ahead. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good for now, but once we start rolling downhill, you'll know how good I really am or how not so good I am, because this has been a really interesting time to live in and examine what's going on in the world of finance. But yeah, other than that, Joey, it's giving a little bit of a preview of what's to come in the show. How are you?
Great. Just looking at the chat here, I want to say hi to one smart fella. Dab is here. Rocks watching from the tub. Don't electrocute yourself, my friend. Where do I sats? Good night, folks. Good to see everyone. And maybe if you're watching quietly, silently, good to see you too. Hopefully you break your silence in the chat. So Len, before we get started, as always, we got maybe a little bit of housekeeping. Last week, we released our episode with Mike Campbell on audio, Money Talks Mike Campbell. I was listening to that today. I really enjoyed that interview. A few of my older relatives saw that interview as well and thought it was very good. So happy to share that. Hopefully you guys enjoyed that and we'll share that as well. And Len, I don't know if you saw in the show mailbox today, but I think we got another guest on the hook for the Bear Cave, I hope. I don't want to jinx it because the last one we had on the hook for the Bear Cave has now ghosted me like I have done so many times in my life to others. It doesn't feel good.
What goes around comes around, Joey. So now you understand what it feels like to be the recipient.
Doesn't feel good. Mm-hmm. Doesn't feel good. I can see him tweeting. He's not responding to my DMs though. So anyway, so we got that. We got Ron Butler, who runs one of the biggest private mortgage brokerages in the country. He's going to be on Wednesday at noon. You're really going to like that.
Noon Eastern.
Wednesday at noon
it's
Eastern. Yeah, not noon Western. Yeah, so we got noon Eastern, all times Eastern. Len and I are Eastern. That's the only time zone. And then next week, I think we have, I want to say...
Shoot, I don't even know. But you know, it's a rammed schedule.
We got someone. That's right. Yeah, we've been adding. So we'll talk a bit maybe after the show, but what we got going on, I'll pull the calendar up and we can look through it. But anyways, Len, two great sponsors. If you don't have any housekeeping, I'd love to talk about them.
Yeah, let's go right to the housekeeping and then just start this.
You mean right to the sponsors. The sponsor right, that I'll talk about is ShakePay, best place for Canadians to buy.
Look at that hat.
I know. And my shirt today, too. I even got the shirt on.
Oh, frick. I should have worn it.
It's not change on camera, Patreon only content. The ShakePay team is incredible. Okay. These guys, they're memeing, they're supporting, they're giving people ways to stack sats. We'll talk about a couple of them right now. They got shaking sats. Use our promo code CBP, Charlie Beta Peter. You can sign up for the app. You get $10 on your first $100 buy. Bear market, $10, of course. It's $30 when times are good, $10 when times are bad. And every day you wake up and shake your phone. You're already waking up and shaking something else. You may as well shake your phone too. Okay, that's number one. Then they got Shake Squads. You and four of your friends or four people you don't know or have never met get together. Every time one of you spends a dollar on the ShakePay card, you all get 42 Satoshis. Adds up pretty quick. I think some of the teams have like 16,000 sats in the 2 or 3 months it's been running, which is great. Maybe more now. They also have the sats back card. So you spend off your CAD balance. They give you Satoshis back 2% of the first 5,000, 1% after that. And then, Len, they also have the Shake Paid. Somehow, I think, still going on. Incredible.
Yes, it is. People are still getting Shake Paid.
You're getting it's comped in
never
Satoshis.
Never-ending promotion.
It's free, man. Go get your coffee with your sats back card. They might just give it to you for free, okay? It's like if the guy in front of you bought the coffee for you. You can't beat it. Okay. So ShakePay, we love them. We hope you love them as well. Give them a shot. If you have any questions, reach out to us, reach out to Carlo Campisi on Twitter, the ShakePay team. Those guys are always willing to help. Great Canadian company. We're happy they're part of the show. Len, one other great company with a great hat and a new logo. Who are they?
Yeah, there it is. Ledin is our second sponsor for today's show. And open up an account with our referral code below and put 150,000 sats on their platform or 75 USDC. Keep it on their platform for 15 consecutive days and Ledin will give you 10 USDC. Add it to your account, no questions asked. Also, Ledin, don't forget, it's a great place to earn some interest on your BTC and USDC. So it's a great place to earn some interest just by parking some of your wealth on there and just sit back and watch it grow. If you also have some bills to pay and you don't want to sell your Bitcoin, because who really does at this time? The price of Bitcoin, it's not really the highest. So don't sell it. Just borrow against it. And Ledin is there to help you out, where you could use your Bitcoin as collateral, 50% loan to value. They give you the money and you're good to go to pay off your bills. But if you are the eternal optimist and you think Bitcoin is going up, you could double up your Bitcoin stack with the B2X option from Ledin, and do it right. Make sure you come in with the markets low and you come out with the markets hot, and you, voila, you have some more Bitcoin on your balance sheet. And also the last thing to have is the Bitcoin-backed mortgages, not available in every jurisdiction. Check their website to see where that's being offered. But while you're there, check to see the new website and also the new app. And also check what the rates are for their savings and borrowing rates, because those change on a month-to-month basis.
Always good advice, Len. When things get too hot, you might want to pull out. Otherwise, you find yourself in a world of hurt. So one other thing, Dab in the chat reminding me that the ShakePay card now offering full credit card utility. If you're among the lucky sort of first tranche of card users, you have the full card plus CVV, CCV, whatever that three-digit code is. So you can use it anywhere. Jordan says uses on Amazon. Great. Love that. I'm going to start doing that too as soon as I get mine. Again, as we brought up with so much bitterness in our voices, Len, with Carlo, being sponsored doesn't actually get us almost anything in advance.
No, we're clubs like everybody else. We're treated the exact same. Dad. And that's the way I would like it to be. No favoritism. Everybody's on the same even keel. And sometimes it's just luck of the draw if you get it or not. So I like that. That's the way it should be. No favoritism.
Sad. Anyway, Len, Len, we got a lot to talk about. The world is on fire.
The price is
In American dollars, the same as last week. What about in Canadian dollars?
$26,777 in Canadian dollars.
Great. What's the first story?
Awesome. Okay. Well, then. All right. Let's talk about what's going on in the world of finance. Now, Joey, I just want to say I was doing the notes for this show for today, and I had to call an audible because normally I would do a recap, a rundown of all the financial stories that's impacting the U.S., both in a positive and in a negative light. But today, it was the first time I just couldn't do it because the sheer amount of nonsense that's going on in the world, the stuff that I'm seeing, the stuff that you're seeing, it's forced me to pivot. Not a Fed pivot, but a Len pivot. So the stories I'm going to talk about are really not the details about stuff like the CPI coming in hot, 55% of workers saying their pay isn't keeping up with inflation and all that jazz. I'm going to leave that shit on the cutting room floor. But what I do want to discuss is the financial mess that we're in and the people that brought us to this point. They were in charge. They helped bring us here. And this just my opinion. Don't want to put Joey in this position, but it looks like that they are working in the best interest of themselves. That's the perception I'm getting. So I'm not saying it is the case. It's just a perception.
Do you mean to say that the people who suddenly banned trading by Federal Reserve officials at the top of the market before raising rates and destroying the equity scene are doing it for themselves and not for the benefit of people like you and me? Is that what you mean to say?
I'm shocked if that ever happens. But yes, it's essentially that. And really, the way it looks like to me, and just appears that they're working to pad their pocketbooks, improve their political and social standings, and it all comes at the expense of the common voter. Ask yourself, have things generally improved? Pick a time period, 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, pick whatever fucking time frame you want, and ask yourself, has things improved on a number of different levels? And if the answer is no, you have to figure out why. What was done, and how can things be improved? The whole financial mess we're in, it's like an exposed foundation. At one time, we had this lush greenery protecting the foundation, protecting the area. Slowly, we got rid of the plant life, exposing the soil. Erosion took place. And now we just have an exposed and cracked foundation, and it's all exposed to the elements. We can't weather the next storm. And from what I understand, just around the corner, we have Hurricane Brandon coming in the next 7 days. So we are absolutely screwed once that hits shores. Something has to be done to improve on things, but let's examine the things that were done to help certain individuals. We just learned, and similar to what you were saying, but this is more recent, thousands of federal officials in the executive branch over the last two presidential administrations have disclosed trading stocks in companies that their agencies oversee, representing thousands of potential conflicts of interest, and new investigation finds. And documents show that over 2,600 senior officials across 50 federal agencies have disclosed owning stock in companies that they have lobbied the agency that they work in. This is, in my opinion, Banana Republic bullshit. Remember, there was a time, not too long ago, that we used to talk about when we sent money to a foreign country, in a country abroad. And we knew at that time there would be a good chunk of it that was going to be siphoned off by the head of the corrupt regime. And we used to lecture with our chest puffed out saying, look, this is unjust. How could people be doing this? But the same bullshit is being done right here on a different level. And people are wondering why we fucking Bitcoin. It's because it's free of centralized nonsense that is right now driving the existing financial system. Is Bitcoin free of problems? Hell no. There's still tons of issues that could be improved upon with the user experience. The space is riddled with a lot of scammers out there asking for their seed phrase or pumping products like Pump always does. And also we have the price of Bitcoin. I have to admit, it's not free of manipulation. I think there's some manipulation on some level that's going on, as this asset still is relatively new. But what it is free of is political and arm's length manipulation that can influence the very core. And this is very much different than the US dollar. Here's a good example why. And we learned that, just another one, the Atlanta Fed president disclosed trades inadvertently were made during the blackout periods. This coming from a prominent individual who has intimate knowledge of which direction the Federal Reserve is going. And this knowledge and this information will impact how markets will be going in one way or another. And we hear so many stories about this, and I think we've become numb to it. Pitchforks and torches, they've been replaced with meme generators. Will anything come out of all this? No fucking way. We just learn to accept it, and it's incredible that people aren't just fucking irate about what's going on, what's transpired. We hear about people on committees, congressional people, senators, and more, supposedly making bank, as you mentioned earlier in the show, through true trades, while the rest of us are left away to toil in the fiat mines until we turn 65, hopefully, and then we could go into our enjoy that later.
maybe.
Yeah. And keep in mind, they're also spoon feeding at the same time that 2% inflation is good for us. Newsflash, there's no magical number that makes it good for us. This is a number that is good for the people that are controlling the levers of the financial system. And every time these shenanigans happen, and the people get a proverbial slap on the wrist, a new president is sent, and the lines in the sand just keep getting redrawn and keep moving. I got to say something. It's like, the way I look at it, it's like Titanic. It's fucking sinking. The captain and his crew, they left with the fucking lifeboats, leaving us all to try to bill water with leaky fucking buckets. And by the way, Joey, those buckets, they're probably made out of paper. Why? Because it's good for the environment. And every time I see a proposal, and we had just one this past week from somebody. This guy's name is, he's a congressman, Alex Mooney. I'm not sure if you saw this. He wants to reinstitute the gold standard for obvious reasons. Well, it leaves me skeptical. How much physical and paper gold does Mr. Mooney own? How much exposure does he have to gold miners? Does his donor list include companies that are somewhat directly or indirectly related to gold? So gone are the days we could see things like at face value. We are forced now really to start digging deeper and deeper every time we see another proposal that's tossed into the mix. And speaking of examining shit at face value, let's do a cheek assessment. And by this, let's talk about Elizabeth Warren. And Miss Warren, she represents the people of Massachusetts. Well, she's also leading a group of lawmakers to push for officials in Texas to asking for details how Bitcoin mining is causing a strain to the state's power grid. And the last I checked, she was not elected to represent people of San Antonio or El Paso, but rather she was representing people living in San Bostonio or El Springfieldo. But I just want to shine a light on people or even governments pissing away money. Student loans, we talked about this at great length, forgiven. Did you hear about this one, Joey? PPP loans.
I'm waiting to hear. I've heard so much about PPP loans in the last maybe 2 weeks, but let's hear what you got.
So it's the Paycheck Protection Program. That's what PPP stands for. And while this was a loan that, as of July of this year, totaled $793 billion, not a small number by any stretch of the means. And it was a loan to keep or help businesses keep their workforce employed during COVID-19 crisis. And any small business with 500 or fewer employees were eligible for this relief. So it was a little money. They closed the whole economy. They had to keep them afloat, so they gave businesses money to stay afloat. That I can understand. But unfortunately, there's been some fraudulent activities going on with PPP loans. And what did they do? Well, they just basically forgave this all. $793 billion forgiven at the stroke of a pen. And all this before an election. Is this coincidence? I'll leave you to decide if it is or if it isn't. And the divide right now, it looks like to me that the divide between the rich and the poor, it's a gap that's constantly growing. And those in the middle just continue to get squeezed out. And proof is in the numbers. And you could actually look at this. Look at the homeless camps that are popping up everywhere in the United States. And we have footage, and everybody's seen it, just in every major city, there's miles and miles of camps showing so many of these homeless people just left behind and discarded by society. And it wasn't too long ago that we used to see footage like this in places like Haiti or Somalia. And we asked, how the fuck could people live in conditions like this? But now it's happening in our own backyards. Our very own citizens are living in these shanty towns. And if you think this shit is going to go away, I'd love to know. So if somebody could present me a feasible proposal how this could go away, because I can't figure this shit out. I think it's only going to get worse before it gets better. If you think Canada's immune to this, hell no. Vancouver, it's a very, very wealthy city with enormous amounts of wealth. They too are now having problems with homeless camp issues, random acts of violence, needles littering parks, and so much more. So if you live in a big Canadian city and you think, oh, this is not going to happen in my backyard, it's going to happen very, very soon, much sooner than you think. And the last thing I just want to ask you, Joey, somebody asked me this a while back, and it made me think, if you had a chance to live in a major U.S. city, which one would you live and why? Because when I think about it, they're stricken with problems. And I can't think of one that I'd want to live in. And think about this. It's 2022, and I can't even think of one fucking city I'd want to live in the United States. Do you have anyone that you would say, yeah, I would want to live in? Miami? I don't know.
Not off the top of my head. It'd be a flyover state probably, though. It wouldn't be a major metropolitan area. Certainly not one of these places with these, fake, vacant, self-important, pretend cosmopolitan mayors. That's for damn sure.
So think about that then. If you are not even willing to consider one of the cities, this is the United States of America, supposedly the home of the brave and the free and the capitalism, all that jazz. You wouldn't even want to live in any of the cities. That's incredible. That's how far things have fallen. But that's my two cents, Joey. It's up to you to take this over.
I get numbed every Sunday when I watch football, that they have like these tributes to America before every game. And I just think like, what exactly are you paying tribute to at the moment? What exactly are Americans proud of as far as like, national unity? Cause I don't see it. That's a story for another time, but it's become kind of a meme, right? Like if you type in tribute to America at about 1:10 on a Sunday afternoon, you're going to get a lot of quality stuff, commentary from people on Twitter who feel the same way. It's funny. You know, the Fed in the States, This honestly knocks my socks off. So there's that story about the Federal Reserve. One of the governors there, Ralph Bostic,
president of Atlanta.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Getting busted because he was trading S&P futures. S&P futures. It's not like it's a fucking ETF or a fucking Microsoft weekly buy or an Apple weekly buy or It's not like his wife's retirement fund just buying. SPX or SPY or whatever, right? He's buying S&P futures around times where they're making decisions and making announcements with their finger on the button. It's insane. Now, this same guy would tell you that he didn't understand the disclosure rules while also in the same breath telling you that he's an expert and should be expected to make a good decision with his finger on the rates button. Does that not bother you?
Yes. Yes, clearly that's showing incompetence for reading the rules. And then you're going to be telling me that you're going to make the best decisions to secure my time, my effort, my energy. Get out of here.
It honestly blows me away. The CPI, don't forget, it came in hot last week. We'll probably talk more about this in a bit. But, in the interest of covering some of this stuff now, because I think it's relevant. The CPI, we always forget when the number is low. We have like this goldfish problem, I think, in North America, most of the first world. And we've talked about it a bit. I don't blame this on the voters or the people who are consuming this news, but we have to have longer memories because when that number comes in low below expectations, it's celebrated by the regime, right? Biden gets up there, or KJP gets up there, and she starts talking about how it's all the good work this president has done. While she stutters, stammers, and lies through 15 minutes of, you know, question and answer, and Ducey gets yet another soundbite out of her that makes the rounds on Twitter. But when the prices, or when the index is high, when the price index comes in high, they blame everyone else, and you know, it's not like they're not trying to keep the price index low, because the CPI, or the SPR drain, the petroleum reserve drain, is continuing at this unbelievable level. And to your point earlier about, you know, shanty towns in America, and the things that are, I think, causing people to find themselves out of work, out of homes, out of luck, and out of hope, man, you know, to be honest with you, I think part of that is these rising costs. And if I look here at a tweet from TXMC, the petroleum reserve, do you know how much it's down since last year by percentage?
35%?
35 points. Lowest since 84.
Yeah.
To give you an idea of like what that means, during Operation Desert Storm, Len, okay, George H.W. Bush authorized 33 million barrels of SPR release. Over a period of 45 days, they only actually released 17 million. The idea that we're somehow in a more desperate situation now to get that oil than we were during Gulf War One to get that oil is patently absurd. Okay. And I'm looking at this stuff and thinking, okay, well, this is obviously, you know, one problem that we on this show can't do much about, and talking about it, I don't think does a lot of good, but it's interesting to kind of put that stuff in context. Now, one thing I've been thinking a little bit about since the last time we spoke, and since we talked to Mike Campbell last week or 2 weeks ago, is pensions and inflation indexing. Mm-hmm. And I did a little bit of research, because I keep hearing from guys like Macklem, for example, as we discussed on our program, that we can't raise wages to match the inflation numbers, because if we do, we'll wind up in this price wage spiral. Maybe true, maybe not true. I don't know. I'm not an expert, certainly not an economist, and nothing I say is financial advice. But when I look at whether or not the rate hikes are going to be enough to stop inflation, I think about two things. One is the supply side is not being affected by these hikes. You know, the cost of energy, like we mentioned earlier, is not changing because because interest rates are going up. But the other thing I think about, Len, is this inflation indexing and inflation protection in pensions. We talked about how about 50% of Canadians are either on the public payroll, municipally, provincially, federally, teachers, hospitals, you name it, or taking pension or social security of some kind. This is about half of Canadians. It's a pretty high number. Do you know what the cost of living increase in OMERS pensions are this year? It's going to be indexed, I think, at the end of November. Do you know what OMERS is the Ontario Municipal Employees pension, by the way, for people who are unfamiliar with that. Do you know what the 6%? Number is? 6% is the cap. So they're going to get the full 6.
Yeah.
Do you know what the cost of living, the COLA increase is in the US next year for their fixed income government?
1.5 to 2%?
8%.
Oh, wow.
So they're going to get all that. Now, if I look here at the teacher's pension, in Ontario, do you know what they get as their cost of living protection? If you retired before 2010, you know what you get as a teacher, cost of living, your inflation protection?
I'm going to guess very low for whatever. I don't know why I'm guessing low.
It matches the CPI dollar for dollar, pound for pound. So if CPI is 7%, if CPI is 7, you get 7.
Way off. Okay.
Super high. Okay. Now, worth noting, in the teacher's pension before 2010, the pension keeps pace with the annual CPI increase. If you retired between 2010 and 2013, they made a change in 2010. To be between 50 and 100% of the inflation number. Then in 2013, they made another change. Now you could be between 0% and 100% of the inflation number based on the funding status of the pension. So they realize that there's a problem, and they realize that it looks to me about 9 years ago, maybe a little longer. And they're trying actively now to do this stuff and fix it. So from an inflationary pressure side, we talked about the demographics in the country. There's a lot more baby boomers living a lot longer and expecting a higher quality of life in their golden years. Do you think giving them somewhere between 6 and 10% more money is going to be deflationary, neutral, or is it going to add inflationary pressure next year?
It should, depending on the amount, it should add inflationary pressure.
It's going to add, it's going to add inflationary pressure for sure.
It really depends on the amount. If it's a small amount, no, but
it's going to be between every recipient of publicly funded pensions or social support is getting between 6 and whatever the inflation number is.
That's sustainable.
That's high and it's not sustainable. Yeah. So that price. that pressure is going to come hard and fast, and we haven't seen it yet. It's because it hasn't been indexed in yet. So next year we'll see that. The 60-40 portfolio for these retirees, okay? Talking about people who are waiting to spend money, the 60-40 portfolio over the last, how many years is this? Almost 80 years. You know what the average return has been yearly?
5%.
9. Do you know what the return is year to date?
Minus 20 something percent.
Minus 33. Yeah. So you're getting absolutely wiped out, okay? Wiped out if you're in this stuff. So between maybe the market recovering, maybe rates going up at a slower pace, pausing, or even being cut, depending on what sort of pressure we see from all these other global central banks on the United States, and a year of pension and fixed income increases being added to the pockets of all these people, what's going to happen? There's going to be more inflation next year. This is to say, I think, Len, that we don't often talk about the sort of like sustained high inflation regime that we're going to see, but I'm like firmly in the camp now that you're going to expect to see inflation at, I don't know, like what, 5%, 6%, 4% for the next little while. Like that's going to be the new normal. Do you think that's probably the case? Do you have another view on that? What do you think?
No, it really is, because there's still a lot of indicators that are very much behind. For example, rent is something which is included in the CPI, but they're taking into consideration rent from many, many months ago, not from what just happened right now or the last couple of months. So once that catches up, and that's just one example I have, that's going to keep the CPI up or even jack it up even higher, depending on how things play out.
Then we can talk about treasuries in the United States, okay? When you think about treasuries, you have to think about them in two ways. One, it's this sort of secure asset that you can use to park money if you're an American or Canadian or whatever. You want to buy a government bond, you can do it. But the other thing they are is, as we've discussed many times, this steady foreign reserve asset. And Japan, most famously, holds a lot of U.S. treasuries. And Japan is now using these U.S. treasuries in a way that is not favorable to the U.S. treasury market. You're pushing the rates, you know, in an unnatural, like with an unnatural weight, because the Japanese government has to sell to try and protect the Japanese yen. So they intervened, quote unquote, intervened, the Bank of Japan, with the yen at 145. This was a couple of weeks ago now. You know what the yen closed at today?
I don't even, is it past 150?
Almost 150, 149 and change. Yeah. So what, you know, they're going to intervene again, continue to sell treasuries and cause problem.
Yeah, they need that money to try to prop up the yen as much as possible. There's so, and that's going to cause a lot of pressure on the U.S. bond and treasury market, because there's going to be a glut of them that's going to just flood
that's
the market.
Right. That's right. And you're going to see that, reflected in rate forecasting. You're going to see that reflected all sorts of different places. Now, as far as like, I hear people saying, well, especially like the fiat apologists, I hear them saying, or see them saying on Twitter, I should say, well, I hear them as well, I guess, when I watch YouTube videos or podcasts. I hear them saying, well, this is the expected sort of nature of things in an environment like this. Okay, well, here's something to think about. That day the CPI was released last week was the 63rd biggest intraday swing out of 15,000 trading days since 1962, a 5.4% move in the S&P 500 in either direction. You remember that? Bitcoin, I think, dropped to something like 18 and 17. Change. Maybe just above 17 triple X. And the S&P, you know, was sort of in the same rocking boat. And for people who think that's normal, you know, if you're a pensioner and or you're about to retire, you know, if you're retiring and the S&P drops 5%, are you going to work another, you know, 6 months? Like, I don't know. That's an exaggeration. But the point is, these swings are unnatural for a traditional market. And I would also like to point out that one of the things Bitcoin has had to deal with is this burden of volatility, as if as an asset, it's too volatile to be absorbed or adopted or used or embraced by people the world over. Certainly too volatile to be viewed as a replacement for the US dollar. Now, I don't know if it's US dollar replacement in the short term, but I know that I'm seeing that volatility everywhere else now in a way that I wasn't seeing it 6 months ago when the Bitcoin price started to drop off, right? Or a year ago when the Bitcoin price started to drop off. So, you know, Len, you're in a time that's, it's very much unprecedented. And I look at what I'm seeing, you know, from the blue check press about the likelihood of like nuclear war or tactical nuclear weapons being used overseas. I look at Germany cracking on the power side of things now. I don't know if you saw, they're going to extend the life of all three of their nuclear facilities today. To me, some people will celebrate that. And certainly I do. I think that those people in Germany deserve a government that makes that decision 100 times out of 100, though it was in doubt up until today, unfortunately. But what I really see is I look at that and I see, okay, they're cracking on this. Are they also going to crack on bank policy? Are they also going to start trying to start influencing the ECB to go a different direction with their rate policy? Are they also going to start trying to make a deal with Russia for peace and bring that energy back online, that energy trade back online? One crack in one sector, in my view, is a precursor to cracks in other sectors. And if one thing has been shown to be a little bit weaker than we were led to believe in the last 5 years, it's this idea of global unity among the Western alliance. I don't think it's going to last through the winter. And, you know, Len, the question maybe we should close out the first topic here on, at least, is what does the U.S. do if Europe decides to be amicable with Russia and secede some territory in Ukraine or stop supporting the war or whatever that looks like in exchange for a return to the quality of life they were accustomed to a year ago? How does that look in the United States? Certainly, especially because the midterm is coming up. How does it look in the United States?
Was Elon Musk involved in the peace talks whatsoever? That's
oh my God. And then that Starlink thing is fucking insane too. Like, what are we talking about? You expect this guy to give away his tech for nothing while Raytheon and the boys are, you know, like Scrooge McDuck diving in the pools of coins? Are we kidding with this? Like, come on, man. Anyway, what do you think?
It makes the United States look very, very weak, and they're going to have to do something even more than what they have been doing. From what I understand, Canadian light natural, the LNG, the liquefied natural gas, is actually going to Europe through United States. So somehow we don't have the capacity to have it go to market, but the United States, through their assistance, that's how it's getting into Europe. And they're going to have to increase the amount of energy that they're going to be able to ship over from US to Europe to make ends meet for this winter. This winter is going to be a big one. If they could somehow survive it and come out of it even just relatively damaged, like not just totally damaged, but even just a minor amount damaged, it's a win. But we'll see how this plays. And you know what? And if they do that, it makes Russia look really weak. And this is Russia's card. They're hoping that Europe capitulates because Europe can't sustain themselves through a very cold winter with very limited supplies.
Len, how many more cones of ice cream am I going to have to watch Joe Biden lick on while he tells me the economy is in, you know, strong as hell, Jack? How many more times am I going to have to watch that as a consumer of media? How many more stories am I going to have to watch about this fucking guy, you know, gorging on dairy sweets and other bonbons, rolling up to kids and telling them when they can and can't date other partners or whatever the fuck this guy is whispering in the ears of children? How many more times I got to see that before somebody at the White House decides enough is enough and they push this guy off the stage? Like, it can't be much longer, can it? This cannot be viewed even by the most strident Biden apologist as quality communications. It simply cannot.
You're going to see it for the next 2 years. No, it's to next 2 years and 3 months and potentially 4 years on top of that. So that's going to be the minimum and that's the maximum, unless something happens, which I hope that really something doesn't happen. But that's the reality. He's going to be there for the next 2 years and 3-4 months at the very minimum. So expect to see this for quite a lot longer. We haven't even gotten to the halfway point of his term. Imagine that. I can't see them get. I don't want to talk about it. It'll get kicked off.
He can't run again, can he? Like, Len.
I talked about this with somebody else, and he at least deserves the right to be considered because he did beat Trump. I'm not trying to say that he has the capacity to lead another term, but I'm just saying, just based off that, you got to give him some some doubt, or not some, you have to give him something to say, okay, you did beat him. It would be unprecedented, at least in recent history, to have a sitting president step away and let somebody else run. They always run a second time, don't they?
I don't know. I just can't imagine this guy. Len, he's walking like, you know, I don't want to defame the guy. I want to stay on track, but like,
I'll say this. It's not the physical, it's the mental, because
it's both.
But well, I would say not, because who was the guy? Was it Roosevelt that had polio? Is that the one? One of them, it was during World War II. I think it was Roosevelt. And they hid that from the fact that he had polio because they didn't want that to be shown as a sign of weakness. To be honest, I don't care if the person in charge has any sort of disability. It could be in a chair. It could be visually disabled. I don't care. It just doesn't matter. But if you have it up here, that's what counts to me, at least. Because really, it's just, can you do it mentally? Not, I don't care about the physical aspect of it. There is very little physicality to that.
I mean, I don't need the guy to be playing wiffle ball, Len. Okay. But like, you know, I do need the guy to not look like he's one strong gust away from, you know, his bones disintegrating on the cobblestone path. You know what I mean? Like,
you didn't want to see him fall off another bicycle.
Like, remember that? Like, that seems like so long ago, but that was another, like, disaster. Anyway, whatever.
So did somebody put a chalk outline on the ground?
They did. Yeah. And the Joe Rogan, like, talking to him on the mat. It was unbelievable. Right. What else we got?
So let's move on to the global side of things. And we could be brief on this because we touched upon already a lot of it. And really, in the global side, the biggest news that's coming up from overseas is that Saudi Arabia, they've reportedly expressed interest with becoming a BRICS nation. And should this happen, there would be an enormous amount of energy under this sphere of influence. Already we have Russia themselves as a member, and they're blessed with a lot of these resources, and they're willing to tap into that. A lot of Western nations can't say the same thing. And this would secure a lot of energy. And they already have the manufacturing under the belt, thanks to China. And let's not forget about India, where they have an interesting mix that they could bring to the table, be it a strong manufacturing base and also a very educated population. And it won't be long before we start hearing about other countries like Bangladesh, Iran, Venezuela, Nigeria, Turkey, and many, many more wanting to submit applications to be part of BRICS. And all the while, we have Western nations, they continue to refuse to drill for oil or natural gas and keep putting up windmills and solar panels. And the balance of power, you could kind of see it. It's shifting away from here to somewhere else. And it looks like, to me, people don't give a shit. But what is going to happen is, well, this Cold War is going to play itself over a period of time. You're going to see, of course, these two superpowers ultimately emerge, the old one and a new one. But around this time, the energy and manufacturing, they won't be controlled by Western nations. And this is a very, very important point. Here's a good one. Energy. $10 per gallon diesel. This will hit the market not too distant future. Even $5 per liter in Canada is going to be coming. And what the fuck you think is going to happen once we get to these prices? Even right now, it's really high, but you're going to more than double it based on what we have right now. Because you have to think that precious little manufacturing exists here. We have to pay the extraordinary cost to have shit shipped over from China to bring it wherever to bring it here. All the while, people are complaining about carbon usage, and they're turning a blind eye to the fact that, you know, everything that landed on our doorstep is the result of oil. And these people keep on throwing tomato juice on fucking Van Gogh paintings. Go ahead, keep on spray painting some more Aston Martin storefronts. Spill some more milk. You guys are going to make a massive difference. And it's people like you that make me so fucking bullish on Bitcoin. That, and watching people like, as you mentioned, some world leaders munching on ice cream in a cone. Come on, man. You hear about him talking about Jack this, Jack, but whatever. Let's talk about the UK. And the fragility of the UK pensions is nuts. We actually talked about it, and you were reporting the number on how small of a number it was that could potentially bring it on the brink of collapse. What was it, like 50 billion or something?
65 billion euros or pounds. So what's that? I mean, it was a lot more USD, but now it's not that
closer to parity than it was ever. Yeah. But you know what's funny? We're talking now, this billions of dollars is now considered small in the grand scheme of things. Like, our perception on what is a large amount of money has changed quite a bit. And the whole Bank of England saga, it really is something to behold, because this past week they reportedly extended the bond purchasing for at least a few days, and they're telling the pensions, get your shit together. You only have a few days worth of QE, because the Bank of England, they do not want to get in a long-term unlimited QE situation. But I guess time will tell if they really stand up to that claim. But with respect to the whole gilt markets, the value of the overall market is only around £2 trillion. The Bank of England almost bought half of them so far. So they're a major holder of just the amount of outstanding gilts over there. In fact, and you touched upon this, they're doing the Bank of Japan method, where the Bank of Japan, well, their assets, this is the number I have here, it's 6x'd, six times in 10 years. Mm-hmm. That's an incredible increase in just a very short period of time. And, you know, we talked about this earlier in the show. Once they start selling that shit, because they want to keep propping up the yen, it's going to put some huge pressures on U.S. yields. So buckle up. But back to Europe. And now as the cold is starting to settle in some parts of Europe, and LNG is going to be tough to get a hold of going forward. In fact, this came out today. China has told large LNG importers to stop reselling to foreign entities. Up until now, they were taking some of the LNG from Russia, slapping on a Made in China sticker, and sending it off to Europe. But unfortunately, the Chinese authorities say, that's no longer going to be the case. And it's too bad that Canada, we have a large amount of LNG. We don't have really the ability to bring all this to market. But we're using the U.S. right now, but still, there's a lot left on the table. But what we do have, Joey, I'm going to say this, we have a lot of spray paint cans, and we could easily export those to fucking Europe, and they could go to face some more Aston Martin dealerships. But one thing is for certain, Europeans are going to be paying a hefty price this winter for heating their homes. And it's not like this day of reckoning was, it was just like, came around the corner. They knew about this day many months ago. What the fuck have they been doing up until this point? Yes, you mentioned the fact that Germany.
What do you mean? What have they been doing? They've been keeping an eye on how many free courses Mario Kart's getting on the Switch. They've been playing Mario Kart. Why wouldn't they be?
They've been doing very well too. I see them at the top of the leaderboard every time they got on the fucking system. So yeah, it makes me wonder, because it's not like this just came and sideswiped them. They knew their shit was going to come. The winter is cyclical. It happens every year. You take all these nuclear plants offline, it's going to get fucking more expensive to do shit. And you're not going to get energy from Russia. Nord Stream is done. Like, just there's so much shit. But I also say another thing, though. There's going to be a lot more distractions coming up, because the World Cup starts in about 1 month's time. So that's going to divert the attention of a lot of people. Let's see if they could huddle up in some pub or something and stay warm this winter, because it's going to be fucking nuts.
What is the plan? Like, how many times have you seen now this picture of Biden like fist bumping with MBS? Just memed to oblivion. First he goes there and says the meeting wasn't about oil, or that they talked about oil, but that's not why he went over there, blah blah blah. Then they cut production quotas by 2 million barrels a day. Okay, that went really well. Then you find out that that meeting was also probably about begging them not to join the BRICS alliance. Oh, that must have gone really well too. That was about 2 months ago, maybe, when that sort of line of thinking came out. Now these guys are talking about joining BRICS. Len, that is the story of the year, man. All this other stuff is like side fodder compared to that. Because the petrodollar runs on the America, UAE, defense for oil for US dollars contract. The whole world runs on that contract. If they opt out, people think the US dollar is this hegemon, completely untouchable outside of global events. It's a stalwart, it's a pillar, it's never going away. Len, it's one meeting away from dissolution. It's one meeting away from dissolution. As soon as people don't have to use the US dollar to buy oil, it's over, man. It's over. That thing doesn't have a future beyond that. And if the UAE is meeting with these other countries and expressing interest in joining their currency and presumably economic and defense pact, what is the plan for global trade then? You need an impartial, uninfluenced third line of currency, of trade, of value exchange. And it's Bitcoin, man. It is Bitcoin. We have been, I think, on this show, conservative in our bullishness over the last like 2 months, maybe something like that. And it wasn't by choice. We didn't have a production meeting about, you know, pouring hot water on the asset that we like. But I think it was easier to see how things were kind of in turmoil and Bitcoin would be taking a backseat. Like, I've called it a luxury asset in the past, et cetera, et cetera. But like, man, am I dreaming that the next man up looks like it's probably Bitcoin, not this BRICS currency, if the US dollar falls? I don't know if it's going to happen right away, but certainly a lot of people are talking about, you know, oh, we are tired of governments printing. You saw that number from the Bank of Canada, 13% of all Canadians own Bitcoin, 25% of people between 18 and 35. That's the up and coming demo. That is a dangerous place to be if you're a central bank. If you're an American central bank governor, or if you're Chairman Powell, or if you work in White House foreign policy, or any of these FOPO think tanks in the States that try and control what other countries do, you absolutely need your currency to remain the hegemon. And if it doesn't, all your models are broken, as Mike Saylor would say, okay? All these things fall apart almost immediately. And I don't know what things look like after that, Len, but I really feel like, you know, looking at the hash rate of Bitcoin, looking at the Lightning Network capacity, looking at the adoption, you know, it seems to me like all these chips are kind of falling into place, man. Like, I don't know. Do you think the chips are falling into place? I think maybe, you know, we're not in a bad spot here. If you're holding some Bitcoin, you know, I'm not saying you're cheering for destruction. We never do. We never cheer for that kind of, you know, transition full of friction, chaos, destruction, damage, death, you know, famine, all these things. But it feels good to be holding some Bitcoin. I'll say that much. What do you think?
I hope you're right. I've been thinking about this long and hard for the past little while, if there's going to be a slow or even quick transition from the US dollar being used as a medium exchange on a global level and you replacing it with Bitcoin. The one thing that I wonder, though, it's going to be a tough sell, because doing that, this is the glass half full in me. It's these countries are going to have to accept giving up a lot of control. And at the same time, they're going to have to be a lot more transparent as well. So those are two things that may not work very well with existing countries that have authority regimes. Like, they don't want to give that up. Is when you give money, for example, to a certain country, we don't know where it ends up. It could be funneled through whatever. But even the ones that are actually the ones creating the money, like the US, the United States, do they want to be as transparent about everything right now? Like, do they want it to, when it comes to money creation, where money is being spent and all? Like, I don't know if they want to do that. Another thing I also think about, if there is going to be an alternate to the US dollar, and if it's not Bitcoin, and it may be the BRICS currency nation, does that run on a Swift network?
I don't know.
Because if it does, you already have an existing system. And we could talk about how ancient and outdated it is, but it still works within the given confines of the financial system. And if it could, it's just simply replacing US dollar with BRICS nation currency. And if that works, then you could potentially then use that as the next currency moving forward. But again, it's giving up a lot of power if ever that's the case. You're going to see US, they're not going to sit idly by. They have a lot of firepower that they're willing to use to make sure that they are still, their currency is still being used. That military is still mighty strong.
We're going to see. I think, like, we've sort of touched on this in the past. There's a lot of countries who want the US dollar hegemony to end. And that country, that list, I think, honestly, Len, like, extends to basically every country except the United States and probably us. Otherwise, I think a lot of people are, you know, looking at the development of economies that, you know, we would call emerging market economies. But as you mentioned, like, India is a huge population, China's a huge population, Brazil, the UAE, like, these countries they're sort of ready for the next step, and they're hitting a wall, a ceiling. And the ceiling is that US dollar hegemony. So I think a lot of those countries behind the scenes, and maybe not so much behind the scenes now, want it to fail. And it just takes one sort of, you know, hole in the dam, let's say, before all of them start piling on. And I think that BRICS thing is one major step. You got to get all your ducks in a row, right? Make sure you're ready to pounce when the opportunity comes. And to me, it looks like those countries are doing exactly that.
One thing to note is that I took a look to see how many foreign military bases the US have, and it's roughly 750. and it's spread across 80 different countries. So when they do bring in their forces like that, they're providing security for that country. So they, I think those countries that have U.S. Bases on their soil, they're probably willing to keep the U.S. dollar in the existing system because they're getting not just the ability to use the U.S. dollar, but also they're benefiting from the U.S. providing some military to help secure that country. So that's, there's a lot to be considered here.
Why the devil's advocate in me, anytime someone says this, there's a lot of people who make this case, right? This foreign military presence, bases in certain countries and near strategic points of strategic interest. I would just point to Afghanistan and Iraq and say the U.S. military, it's a paper tiger in this respect. I'm not saying that the U.S. couldn't coordinate and conduct a focused and extremely destructive attack if it needed to, but these satellite bases, I don't think they're viewed as an issue by these countries anymore. And I certainly wouldn't view it as one. I'm not a military strategist at all, but Jesus, show me a victory that the U.S. has had militarily in the last 15, 20 years. You can't do it. It's been failure after failure, tons of blown money, tons of money laundering, tons of enrichment for the defense contractors and neocons and war hawks on their shores. I don't view this as an issue. I don't know. What do you think?
I think the two that you could look at, and it's not in the last 15 to 20 years, but Japan and Philippines, where they have substantial military presence in each of those two countries. And from what I understand, it's a beneficial relationship for both parties. So that's going to be the one that I'll use. And maybe even Taiwan might be another one. So there's lots of examples in that neck of the woods. But whatever, this is far beyond me. And this is, I guess, outside the scope of this show, because let's talk about more about Bitcoin.
Well, okay, just one last thing. Japan and Taiwan, I get, but those are not the same as the other. What was the number you gave there? 700?
750 bases spread across 80 different countries.
I bet you those two in Japan and Taiwan are equipped to hold down the fort, so to speak.
And Philippines as well.
You know what I mean? Yes. There's a few in that area, and I understand Guam. Why. I think, you know what I mean? I think we all understand why. But are you telling me they got all that kind of firepower, that kind of horsepower, all their military installations abroad? There's no fucking way. Anyway.
All right. Let's move on. Let's talk about the Canadian news. And first thing I want to talk about is, we touched upon this, I think, at the start of the show, where ShakePay, they now extended the Shake Earn to the top 1,000 people on their wait list. And I know we have at least one or two people that listen or watch our show that were granted access. That's awesome. They're going to be rolling this out in stages, in waves. So the next batch is going to be coming in the next little while. I can't say when, but it's going to be in tranches. They've done this in the past. And really, ShakePay Earn, what is this? Well, you park your Canadian dollars on the ShakePay app, and monthly you're going to be given a reward, APY. I forget what the number, the percentage is, but that reward will be in Bitcoin, and that's going to be immediately added to your ShakePay account. So it's another way to stack sats. They're slowly rolling this out. If you are in a wait list, keep doing whatever you can to get on the top of the wait list, because they already extended it to the first 1,000 users. So unfortunately, I wasn't there.
It is working, man. I know I am putting more CAD into my balance every day, basically, or every couple of days. I try and keep it in the hundreds now. And I've never done that before. Usually I just put money in there if I know I'm going grocery shopping or something like that. But it's working. And I think, like you mentioned, a few people that watch this show are using the product now. So I'd be curious if you guys have some comments, throw them in the chat. We'll talk about it maybe in the after show. I'm expecting this to be a hit, because people want to stack Bitcoin. ShakePay wants you to put CAD in your account, and it's a sort of a match made in heaven. Now, the question is, that marketing budget is going to run out at some point, right? It must run out at some point. So I don't know how they're going to pay for that after, and Carlo can come back on and talk to us about it. I'm sure he wouldn't mind. And I want to hear more. Also, do you have the ShakePay card story on there?
No, let's talk about that right now.
Yeah.
Apparently this is being rolled out, so there's going to be more features that you could use the card. So for example, if the existing card or the lack of card, you can't go ahead and make purchases online, but when they're rolling it out and you get access to the added features, then you can make purchases online. So theoretically, you could make purchases on Amazon or Best Buy or whatever the heck you buy online and take advantage of the ShakePay Visa card and get all the benefits of using the ShakePay Visa card, but doing it online. So great way to stack sats. It's always available through ShakePay.
Sweet deal, man. I'm definitely going to use that card online because I don't like my Visa card gives me basically nothing back. I think it's like 1% or something like that. So why wouldn't I just take that in Satoshis instead? It's a no-brainer. Like I would much rather do it through ShakePay. Len, that company is doing all the right things. And I am very much looking forward to see what they got cooking because I'm looking across the bow at what's going on in the States. Swan is about to go public, it looks like. They're hiring the firepower, the in-house expertise to bring that company public.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, they made that announcement a few days ago. And I think, honestly, like no inside info here. I think ShakePay is going to do the same. I don't know why you wouldn't. People want a piece of this stuff. And I can't point to a thing they've done in the time that I've been using them. And that's been like 4 years now, probably maybe a little longer, 5 years, that I didn't like. Every time they add something, I like it. Even if I don't use it right away, I use it if I'm given enough time. I use it if I spend enough time on the app and on the platform. I don't know. What do you think? Have they made any missteps in your view? And we should mention, they sponsor the show, but they don't pay us to talk about this.
No,
we can say whatever we want.
This is through our own volition.
We're still saying nice things.
Yeah. So I don't recall any missteps along the way. In fact, I'm going to give them some credit here. Was it last year in March when volume was so high?
Before they sponsored the show. Remember, Jean came on a Twitter space with us.
So all other exchanges, or at least a lot of other exchanges, including like big ones like Binance, they experienced a downtime because they couldn't keep up with the amount of volume that's going on. But ShakePay was still able to do so. And they were getting, I forget what the number was, but there was a high number of, money coming in, like e-transfers. And it was just an incredibly high number. This was a time when everyone was working from home. So yeah, whatever they're doing is doing well. In terms of going public, I don't know. I mean, the only thing I could say is the advantage of going public is you're able to get access to a heck of a lot more capital. Do they need that capital right now? I don't know. I'm not on the inside looking out, so it's hard for me to
say.
Bear
market, right? Maybe this is the time. I'm not sure. I should mention Boomer in the chat saying they do use Coinbase custody. That's something I don't like. But I don't know what else they should be doing. Like I'm not in that ecosystem enough to know.
They also mentioned,
Boomer, let us know. But
it's also mentioned that even they recommend to not leave anything on the exchange. So if you do follow their advice and everybody else's advice, the whole using Coinbase as custody is thrown out the window because there's nothing to custody if you take everything off. And considering that they pay the fees, why would you leave anything on the exchange? It's a no-brainer.
But it's a great experience transferring out too. Like I did it to my cold card, a little while ago now. Awesome. Anyway, okay. Enough pumping the sponsor. We like ShakePay. You guys know that. What else we got?
No, let's go to the next sponsor because let's talk about Ledin. They just announced that they're going to be allowing for automatic topping between your Bitcoin savings and the Ledin loan. So right now, when you take out a loan from Ledin, and if there's any sort of balance issues that you have to manually add more Bitcoin, it's now the way it's set up, you could turn on a new feature. Will it take the BTC straight from your savings account, and no longer will you have to manually add any more Bitcoin to reach the 70% loan to value ratio? So it's a new feature that's being rolled out with Ledin. So if you are borrowing against your Bitcoin using Ledin, there's now an automatic feature that you could automatically transfer from your savings to your loan collateral address. So another cool feature from Ledin. And let's see what else comes out from them. They just bought a company last week, so we'll see if more things are going to be rolled out.
I don't use the Bitcoin loan thing, so it doesn't really apply to me. But that seems like a good idea, right? I mean, presumably you'd want to top up immediately and in the most sort of frictionless way possible, right? Mm. I think, yeah.
Yeah, okay. It does make sense. And I, through experience, I haven't used a loan feature. So I have, I'm just speaking what I read over here. So it's not through firsthand experience. So yeah, I mean, it makes sense, but whatever. Let's move on, Joey. And because we have so much more to talk about, I clubbed a whole bunch of stories together here into one big one. So Toronto, Canada, they topped the UBS rankings for cities with that's in danger for the home price decline. So if you look at in terms of which is the biggest bubble in terms of cities, like real estate bubble, according to UBS, Toronto is number one on that list, and they overtaken Frankfurt for number one. So it's number one. Finally, we're there. Toronto, we made it. A Canadian city. It's primed to get absolutely destroyed once the bubble bursts. And if you think that what they're saying here is just simply speculation, well, this all goes part and parcel with the interest rates. And the Bank of Canada looks like they're going to continue down the path of raising rates aggressively. The governor, Tiff Macklin, was saying that the recent depreciation of the Canadian dollar against the US dollar, if this continues, they have more work to do on interest rates. Reading between the lines, they're going to raise them continuously. And it's a way to keep the Canadian dollar more competitive against the US dollar. Now, with all this being said, even right now, they've raised the rates quite a bit. The beginning of the year, we were, 0.25%. Now we're sitting at around 3.25%. The five-year fixed rate mortgages, they're very, very high right now. In fact, they haven't been seen at these levels since 2008. And if you're going to be renegotiating a mortgage based on today's rates, and it's only going to get worse as of moving forward, you're now talking an extra $100 for every $100,000 originally borrowed. So over a given year, if you're talking a $1 million home, it could get very, very costly. You're talking another 12 grand if you mortgage a full $1 million. And this is now impacting also markets such as the condo flippers. This has been a very popular method in Toronto, where you buy a condo unit before it's built. So you buy it on assignment, and they were flipping this, but no longer this is the case. In fact, now people are left holding the bag. And these numbers, they never get captured in any of the realtor information, because these are outside of the real estate stuff. They're done privately through the condo people. So it's absolutely nuts. And the last thing I got to say on the real estate side of things, and we talked about this, but I just want to keep bringing up this stat. 33% of residents of the Covenant Homeless Shelter in Toronto, they're students of the local universities. This is a sad, sad stat. And the fact that we have so many people, young people living in homeless shelters, and they're fucking students, post-secondary students. We failed them, man. We failed them hard.
Don't worry. Once they get their gender studies degrees, they'll be living in those condos for sure. A couple of things to note here. One, very excited to talk to Ron Butler on Wednesday. He's going to have a ton to say about this. He's very active on Twitter. The man is very bright. It's going to be a good interview. Please tune in, 12 o'clock Eastern. Number two, Len, we are seeing now a lot of stories about input prices and what it means for housing delays. And in my own life, I have a few people who bought homes last year and the year before that were supposed to move in around this time, October, November, December this year. And none of them are able to move in, not a single one. And they've all been pushed until May, April, May, June of next year. Fine, except that as the home prices continue to decrease, the value of those homes goes down, loan to value issues start to pop up, interest rates are getting higher. How many of those people are going to be able to afford to live in those homes? How many of those people are going to be able to afford to buy them at the sale price of their home next year compared to now, compared to last year, compared to whenever, right? This is going to be a serious problem. There's a lot of indicators that tell me that what we're going to start seeing is a glut of houses on the market and no one able to buy them. Now, I said on this program, and I still believe, I think to some extent, there's a floor on single family starter homes. You know, I don't know what that floor is, but generally speaking, if you want a home that's like 800 square feet, 750, 800 square feet with a basement, maybe finished or unfinished, a little bit of a fixer upper, there's always going to be a floor on that because most people can afford those homes. But, you know, the thing to consider, as I mentioned, the rates and input costs and all these different things, loan to value, of course. But the other thing, Len, to consider is the stress test. The stress test is more difficult now than it was a year ago, and presumably will continue to get more difficult as rates continue to go up and input costs, energy continues to go up. I expect to see next year people for the first time in my circle talking about their monthly carrying costs as part of the reason they can't go on a vacation or can't go out on a weekend trip or can't travel or whatever. We talked about trigger rates. About 50% of Canadians are on that variable rate mortgage. They're going to start to hit home pretty soon if they haven't already. You and I have talked about the cost of energy going up in the winter. It always does anyways, but presumably it's going to go up even more this winter than in winters past because of demand. And, you know, Len, let's face it. One thing we don't talk about enough on this show And I've heard this a couple of times. Peter Schiff made a good point about this on the weekend that really hit home for me. I wish I'd written it down, but he basically makes this point that, you know, the employment numbers for these kids, for example, who are coming out of school, you know, if you're working 20 hours a week, you count as someone that's employed, but are you really employed? Are you really contributing to the economy working 20 hours a week? Or are you just treading water, trying to keep your head, you know, above sea level? You're not really contributing. These people can't afford to buy homes, can't afford to live in apartments, rent condos, all this stuff. It just continues to apply pressure, right? And I don't know what the outcome is, but all those things together cause, you know, potentially unrest at some point. You know, if people can't live and afford to live and work and can't afford to have families, can't afford to do things for their children and for their elderly parents, for example, presumably that leads to unrest. And I don't know if Canada will get there. We talked, you know, with a few guests, Mike most recently, about the sort of empathetic nature and nihilism, I think, of young Canadians, especially. Let's see. I'd be curious as to what that looks like. We talked about how that could shape an election season coming in the next year or so, year and a half. All this stuff together is not good, though. And I'd be curious, Len, in your area, you live, Oakville area. I live in Hamilton area. Those are two pretty popular housing markets. Anecdotally, when you go for your walks with your dog or your wife and your daughter or whatever, do you see as many for sale signs as you did 2 months ago or no?
Yes. And they're staying up. Not only that, they're staying up for longer for sale. Like that's, it's incredible. I think I said it in the show before. There's some homes in my area, they're still trying to sell it for prices, which seems like it's the beginning of 2022 or even sometime the end of 2021, which is unreal considering how much the environment has changed since then. People are, I'm wondering if they're just trying to get as much as they can because they bought a house at a very high price and they just want to, you know, as much as they, so this is something that's just going to, it's a domino effect. And it's going to take some time.
People who bought new builds a year ago paid 30% more than those new builds are worth now. And they're going to sell their house on top of that loss on the value of the new place. They're going to sell their house for 30% less. It's a mess. That is a messy, messy situation. Ron's an expert. We're going to talk to him about it on Wednesday. We're going to find out more. It's going to be good.
The only thing that's gone up too is rent. So if they want to, the people in those positions, if they want to rent out the home that they purchased, maybe that's a way to make ends meet. And I don't know. It's a touchy situation, but let's move on. Something you touched upon much earlier in the show, there was a report from the Bank of Canada, and it talks about that the ownership of Bitcoin has gone up quite a bit. In 2018, it was sitting at around 5%, and it has jumped to 13% in 2021. And if you look at the breakdown, the people that are between 18 and 34, well, 25%, 1 in 4 Canadians in that age group own Bitcoin. And this is something that's not really crazy numbers in terms of like the age bracket. I would suspect that people that are younger are going to be using Bitcoin, but this number will continue to grow over time. What are you doing with it? They're probably not transacting with it. They're probably buying it and holding on to it. And given the price of how low it is, they probably haven't sold it too. So they're going to be exposed to Bitcoin moving forward. They're going to understand the price of Bitcoin. They're going to understand the property of Bitcoin because they bought into it. They understand it. And I think this is going to be a net gain over a period of time. See what happens in the next few years, but number go up.
More than 60% of Bitcoin hasn't moved in a year now, right? I think I saw that stat the other day. So even as the price is going down and pressure to sell, you know, potentially mounting, like we talked about what that long-term holder cost basis is a little while ago. That's a popular stat. So you look at that and think, okay, great. Even through a bear market, adoption is going up. Now, here's another question for you. How many people who are competent Bitcoiners would take a call from the Bank of Canada or their subsidiary polling agent and answer honestly about holding Bitcoin? I would bet there's more people who are holding it than answered truthfully to that.
That's a good question. Good point. Right? Yeah. Good point. Yeah. All right, let's move on because that number is probably sky high. Actually, if you think
who's taking the call from like your phone? You look at your phone, okay? Oh, who is it calling? It's the bank. It's Tiff again. T. Macklem. Okay, you pick up. Tiff, how are you? Yeah, yeah. No, things are good. Oh yeah, I heard about the rates. Yeah, yeah. Tough go. Anyway, what's going on? Do I hold any Bitcoin? No, I don't hold it. No,
losing signal.
Sorry, dude, you're breaking up. Like who's answering that question? Yes, to the Bank of Canada. No one. And also, Len, that's like we talked about this before. Polling is flawed because you only get a certain subsection of the public with a poll, right? Like I cannot think of a time where I had a poll in front of me for a political campaign or a Bitcoin custody, you know, survey. Never. So they're only getting
a
like
few
some,
calls.
Okay, but like, you know, you're older than me too, right? Maybe they're trying to call you. I don't have a landline. I don't know if
I don't
a
either.
But like, and I don't pick up my phone if I see like whatever. I'm not picking up. And also, if you leave me a voicemail, I'm not calling you back out of principle because I'm not 100 years old.
That's why you're not calling me back, you bastard.
That's why. Yeah.
The fuck. Yeah, I'm stopped leaving voicemails.
I only respond to tweets. So like these people who they're getting, this is like the people who are probably the easiest to get in a survey like this. And so I think like, what's the Venn diagram for people who hold Bitcoin and are gettable via traditional survey means? I bet you it's not that there's not much overlap, right? It's probably that number is probably a lot higher than that 35%, 18 to 34. That's great. Really good news for
25%.
Bitcoin.
So really, instead of being 1 in 4, it's 4 out of 4. So it's 100%. Everybody owns Bitcoin between the ages of 18 and 34. Incredible numbers. Is broken here in Canadian.
Breaking news.
Let's move on. This winter, you touched upon this and about the cost of energy this winter. And most Canadians who pay for natural gas or electricity, they're going to be expected to pay much higher bills. And it's averaging, they're expecting between 50 to 100% higher than previous years. And that's according to one energy analyst. And most Canadians, and this is 61%, they use traditionally gas-powered systems such as furnaces and boilers to heat their homes. And a smaller portion of the population, 29%, use electric baseboards and radiant heating. The rest use heat pumps, stoves, and other heating systems. So as a result of everything going up, cost of energy going up, cost of fuel going up, it's going to be a very, very challenging winter for even people in Canada. So 50 to 100% increase in the cost of heating your homes this winter. So yeah, if you enjoy wearing shorts during the winter months, you may want to change your tune and start wearing long johns and maybe a hat or gloves, because it's going to be really, really costly to keep the numbers high with respect to heat.
Are you a long john guy?
No, I'm a shorts guy, 100% all year round.
You've mentioned that in the past. That's kind of strange. Okay, next question.
Is it? In my head, yeah. It's summer all year round.
Okay, well, that's strange for sure. Yeah, 100%, which is fine. But okay, in your house, what do you keep the temperature at night?
So it's the same as the day. I keep it 23. I like to keep it warm.
What is that? What is that in Fahrenheit?
Fahrenheit? I don't know. Let me 23 Celsius.
23 sounds hot. That sounds hot.
73.4.
That's not right. I keep my house at night like 66, 67. Mm-hmm. And then during the day, I don't know. Depends what I'm doing. I might put it up to 69, 70. But at night, 60, you got to have it at 66. How do you sleep?
I'd wake up in a
pool of my own sweat. I would lose 10 pounds of water weight overnight sleeping like that.
So famously, many years ago, my air conditioner broke down and we didn't fix it. So we went through the whole summer with no air conditioner. When there's no alternative, Joey, you could easily adapt to the situation that you're in. And even growing up, I never had an air conditioner until I was, I think, 10 years old. So we just made do with what we had. It was fine. We just, even in the car, no AC, just roll down the windows. That's the way to do it. And just, I like that. And even in the hottest day, I enjoy playing tennis. I don't care how fucking hot it is. I'll go out there and play. It's too cold for me sometimes, but I haven't had too hot yet.
Listen, I wouldn't share that with anyone else.
Why, man?
To yourself.
Why, man? I like
that is so hot. Even people in the chat, like that, come on. 23 degrees is so goddamn hot. When I go to the gym in the morning, like I'll start my car. This is my routine. Okay. I start my car. I go back inside, get my hoodie on, get my shoes on, and then go. My car warms up at 23 degrees. So that when I get in the car, the leather's not like, you know, like chapping my thighs. You know what I mean? But like, I can never sleep in that. I can't. We gotta talk about this after the program is over because there's more to say about this.
When that air conditioner broke, when my house air conditioner broke, the upstairs was always above 30 degrees, always, because heat rises on the second floor. We just live with it. And you know what? 9 months later, Sabrina was born too. So we thoroughly thrived in that time too. So so that's a totally different topic altogether. But oh, yeah, man,
print the shirts. We're thriving.
Yeah. And I've been to India and I really enjoy the weather over
listen,
there.
Listen, 23 is too hot. Okay. That's a fact.
Not to me, man. It's never fucking too hot. Too cold, yeah. Too hot, never. Never, ever. Anyways, let's move on. So some good news for people in Canada. We're going to be getting money from the government in not too little while. It's the Climate Action Incentive Payment, the CAPE. It's starting to roll out October 14th, and this is being rolled out by the federal government. I can give you stats for what's happening here in Ontario. So anybody listening in other parts of the country, I'm sorry I don't have the numbers, but if you are in Ontario, this is how the breakdown is going to be. $373 is going to be coming for every individual, $186 for a spouse or common law partner, $93 per child under 19, and $186 for the first child to a single parent family. There's also going to be rural supplements of 10% on the base for people living in small or rural communities. So yeah, it's going to be a windfall of cash coming in. They're going to be helicoptering in into our accounts, and that's going right to Bitcoin.
So what is that for people who have kids then?
It's for everybody. It's the CAPE. You get more if you have children, but it's
everyone's setting their thermometer to 30 degrees. Then is that what you're telling me? It's time.
Should. Yeah. Why not?
When do I get mine? My wife has probably been getting all these checks and not telling me about it.
They rolled one out, I think, in July of this year. So you should have gotten something earlier.
I don't know. I don't pay attention to that.
Well, pay more attention because that's fucking free sats courtesy of the government. And anyways, let's talk about the federal government too. A little bit more. It just came out that Canada now spends more money on interest for servicing the federal debt. And that now stands at $31.2 billion. And it's actually more than we spend on our national defense. I did some looking into the budget, and it was earmarked that we would be spending around $26 billion for servicing the debt for this given year. We're halfway through the fiscal year. It's now sitting at $31 billion. It's probably going to go quite a bit by the end of this fiscal year, given the fact that interest rates continually go up. So they missed the mark by quite a bit with how much they're going to be serving, how much it's going to cost to service the debt. And we talked about this, I think, last week, where Freeland was famously saying that borrowing money on the cheap, because at the time
incredible content.
You know, it works when everything is cheap, but when it's not, now you have to pay the piper. And here we are, every new debt that is being issued, it's going to come at a more costly amount to pay off. We're just absolutely screwed. There's no way we could pay off this debt. There's no way, right? Like, it's just, it's there forever.
They'll inflate it away. Like we said, between 4% and 6%, that's the number, right? 7%, 5%, like whatever that new inflation regime is, it's the only way out. So if they're going to do that, then fine. But, you know, at least be honest about it. There's no way that we can keep sustaining this. It's very strange to me that no one in the mainstream media talks about debt service when it comes to the Canadian government. I hear stories about retail debt service all the time, how much it costs to keep a mortgage, to pay lines of credit back, your HELOC, all this stuff as rates go up, but never anything about the federal debt. That's the most important number, man. That's the most important number. That's going to dictate policy in this country for some time to come. Also, in the same vein, did you see that the Ford government snuck in a story under the gun on Friday afternoon about a $15 billion surplus this year? Yeah. And they didn't want to say anything about it because that came from increased tax receipts thanks to inflation. And so they're basically warning in their documentation that this is not going to be the norm, blah, blah, blah. I expect this to go back to a deficit. But, you know, we're at a place now where even balanced budgets come with an asterisk because of inflation. It's not the positive thing it would have been 2 or 3 years ago, which is weird, man, really weird, but something worth paying attention to.
Yeah, and let's move on. And this is a story that's potentially going to impact mining Bitcoin in Canada. Quebec is expected to run out of electricity in the middle or the end of next decade. And even Ontario, we're going to have some problems moving forward. We have plans to refurbish some nuclear reactors up Bruce and Darlington, but it's impacting business in Ontario. Windsor has lost out on a $2.5 billion factory because the region lacks electricity. And even Toronto, by 2025, they're going to run out of power for electrification of their transit system. And this is according to estimates from the Independent Electricity Systems Operator. So Ontario and Quebec is going to have some problems moving forward with energy creation. Brownouts coming forward? I don't know. I don't see them building any more plants. Maybe some small nuclear plants would be fantastic to build. But I don't know what the heck's going to happen moving forward. It looks like it's going to have too much demand and not enough capacity. And well, another thing to consider is a lot of people are buying more electric cars today than they were yesterday. So that's more demand on the grid. But you know what? Who cares? It's going to be more costly to heat your home. So maybe this is a good thing. So brownouts for everybody, less heat for everybody. And oh, by the way, you got to be pushing your electric car.
It's crazy, man. I thought we were pretty good in Ontario with our sort of nuclear slash hydro balance for electricity. So what,
like, we had a deal with Quebec. So the deal
is the deal?
So the deal has been nixed. They didn't continue the deal. So we used to take, there used to be some, I forget how it works, but it's been partially nixed. We're still going to be sending power in the wintertime and getting it from Quebec in the summertime because we need power over here in the summer and they need power over there in the winter. But aside from that, I think there's some sort of deal was nixed. And I think both the provinces are fucked. And unless they could build out massive generators of electricity moving forward, I don't know how they're going to be able to do this given the constraints of the governments. They don't have much money. We're just going to have to do it.
We can tackle the obesity epidemic and the electricity shortfall with hamster wheels for anyone with a BMI over 30.
How about just those Pelotons? Could you put like a flywheel on that?
They're all on sale, so we could probably get a few. They're basically giving them away. What did Mike say, Campbell, about Peloton? He's like, as long as everyone has one in their bathroom, in their kitchen, in their living room, this should be okay.
Yeah. All right, let's move on. The last Canadian story I have is, well, Loblaws they have said they're going to be freezing the price of all no-name brand products until January 31st, 2023. They're not going to be cutting prices. They're freezing prices. I have a feeling that Jagmeet Singh is going to be taking credit for this, and he should. take credit for this because he's been saying for a long time that they've been gouging prices and everything. And I don't think they've done this as a result of what he's saying, but politically, he should take credit for this. It makes sense. And he should say, look what I've done. Based on what I've been saying, they finally reacted and they listened to us. But it's not from what he said. I think they're just doing a goodwill service, regardless of what Jagmeet said or whatever. But yeah, so there you go. So if you're looking for some cheap products moving forward, check out Loblaws, the no-name brand products. They're frozen with respect to price until January 31st.
We can get him doing a press release, like a video from his home. Instead of that, you know, $3,000 chair that he was sitting on before, he can have a no-name chair that just says chair on it, like all the other no-name stuff. If the millionaire Marxist takes credit for that, I would not be surprised. But, you know, I think Galen Weston is kind of he's a savvy businessman running all those different organizations under the Loblaws umbrella. So I'm not surprised to see this from him. I think it'll be on television. You know, maybe you and I'll see that ad in between ads for The Good Doctor and the CDIC on Sundays. So maybe we'll talk about that next week, whatever he comes up with. But you know what? If you're a grocery shopper, you gotta be happy to see that, right? Do you buy any no-name brand stuff? I think we probably do. I don't know.
Daniela does the shopping. But somebody just mentioned, one smart fella says they announced that they raised the prices before the announcement. And if that's the truth, that's just perfect. That's the way to do it. Just raise it and then say we're freezing it. And they're doing it for only,
baby.
Yeah, 3 months doing it. So yeah, good move on their part if that's the case. But yeah, that's it for the Canadian side. I got a couple of stories on the rest of the story. I'm going to just skip it because we don't have too much time.
Sure.
And we'll just transition right to the no coiner and Bitcoiner of the week. Do you happen to have anybody?
I don't have one, but I have a recommendation, which I've done in the past in lieu of Bitcoin of the week. But before I make my recommendation, we don't have a producer on this show, so I have to do this myself. Len, do the read.
So this is brought to you by Tahini's Restaurant. It's a great place to buy lunch and or dinner. It's owned, the franchise is owned by Ali. He is a wonderful Bitcoiner. If you have not seen him, check him out on YouTube. He's talked to many, many people about Bitcoin. He's talked to Canadian politicians about Bitcoin. And it's, you know, they have great food. I've been there numerous times. Joey has. In fact, there was even Bitcoin meetups over there. And one of the earlier ones this year happened at a Tahini's in Hamilton. So check it out. If you're in Southern Ontario, you're within driving distance of a Tahini's. So you might as well go eat there. Lunch or dinner. Check it out.
Go check it out. My recommendation, Len, off the beaten path here, but if you want to listen to two Ethereum guys get their fucking face absolutely wiped by a guy who thinks Ethereum is garbage and just, you know, isn't afraid to really tell him how garbage it is, Bankless today had this guy, Noah Smith, who goes by No Opinion on Twitter, I think. And these two guys on Bankless continue to just soy face their way into embarrassing situations every single week when they bring on a quality guest. And so this guy, they're trying to make the case for Ethereum as base money. They're trying to make the case for Ethereum as the store of value and means of transacting in the Web3 metaverse over and over again. These guys try and bring this stuff up and Noah Smith just crushes them time after time. Like, no one's buying anything in your Ponzi Web3 scam. No one's buying anything in the metaverse. No one thinks Ethereum is money, blah, 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 blah. Can't recommend it enough. If you can make it through the first like 20 minutes where they're kind of all just circle jerking, it's worth your time. You'll enjoy it. I swear. I must have laughed like at least 20 or 30 times listening to the end of that, the last half of that podcast. It was cracking me up. Those two guys, by the way, continue to be the most two cringe guys in crypto. They are terrible, absolutely terrible interviewers. I found out the other day that guy, the one guy, had a podcast before called like Crypto Curious or something like that. And that's how he kind of rose to prominence. And I don't know. I'm looking at all this stuff and looking at the Ethereum transactions now being censored as well. The Ethereum blocks being censored, which we should probably talk about in the after show. We didn't bring it up at all in this program, but maybe we'll talk about it tonight after the show. It's all bad over there. If you're holding Ethereum, like maybe you are and you're just not telling anyone about it, get rid of it, man, because this thing is going downhill in a hurry. So that's my recommendation. Check it out if you got some time.
The problem is if you sell, the gas fees are very high. And plus, who knows how long it takes to get that block mined. I'm not sure if they still have a huge backlog of blocks to be mined. And I was reading, was it yesterday or the day before, that the majority of validators, I think 60% of validators are just a small number of not groups of people, but actually entities. So it's very much centralized in that respect. And you could say anything you want about Bitcoin miners being, few mining pools that are representing most of the hash rate. It's easy to redirect your ASIC miner, even if you're on a mining pool, to a different mining pool, even just do solo mining. When you do it with Ethereum, you're staking your Ethereum and you can't unstake it. It's staked until they release the code to unstake it. So it's very much centralized in that respect. And another thing too is, they were saying that a lot of the validators or a lot of the nodes are on cloud-based services. So it creates another avenue of attack. You don't have total control. It's like doing self-hosting versus having somebody else host your ASICs equipment when mining. We talked about this with Matt from CleanSpark. It creates another layer in the whole. It's a very complex model to begin with, but you're adding another layer of complexity, which doesn't need to be added. And you're leaving it in chance for somebody else to make some issues and that's cause right. You don't want that. But anyways, that's Ethereum in a nutshell. Fuck it, it's garbage. Get your Ethereum off the exchange, whatever fuck you have, and convert it to Bitcoin. But I do have a no-coiner, and I'm not sure if you heard of this person, Cecilia Rouse. She is the White House Council of Economic Advisors chair.
This will be good.
Have you heard of her or no?
No, but I can't wait to find out more about Ms. Rouse.
Well, she's great because she was characterizing the economy as, quote, red hot, end quote. And especially when she's looking at labor and housing markets, she's saying everything is just coming along very well. Red hot. I don't know how the fuck anybody could look at the economy.
What flavor of ice cream was she eating when she said it?
Jackie was red hot. So I can't believe anybody could use that term and characterize the economy like that, because it is anything but. You have people, young people that are making money, two or three jobs to make ends meet. You have older people that are coming out of retirement to try to make ends meet. people are watching the home prices plummet, and we talked about this quite a bit earlier in the show. There's so much shit that's going wrong. Energy prices keep going up. The economy is not going strong. The economy is sputtering along, and a lot of this GDP. Well, people are fucking working extra to prop up the GDP. This isn't a good way to look at it and say, look, it's red hot. It's anything but. And this is somebody that's on the administration team of Biden, like, and they have a very important role. I can't believe that they have that she's there advising. She's saying that they're going to do everything to the best of their abilities to work to bring costs down. I have no fucking hope in hell that they're going to do it. If anything, they're going to stumble upon it, or somebody else is going to do it. It's not going to be through their own volition or through their own action. It's going to be by sheer chance. We are absolutely fucked with people like this in charge. They have no clue what's going on. The economy is not red hot. Maybe the shit that's coming out of her ass is red hot because she's eating too many hot. But fuck that, man. She's truly a no-coiner. It's all policy that's driving this. It's absolutely a bonkers that people are saying this.
I'm blown away, man. Who are they talking about? There's a great tweet today that I retweeted from someone. I forget what the guy's name is. But if the GOP wins the midterms, suddenly the definition of recession is going to revert right back to two quarters, and they're going to pin it all on the Republicans. Like, it's going to be so obvious. KJP is going to get up there, and her and Ducey are going to have a tete-a-tete about the definition of recession, and it's going to be so good. So good. I cannot wait. I am dying for that. This is all good content, okay? It's a great time to be in the content game. I'll say that much.
Yeah, it's so much is going to come out. But you know what? Let's talk about this in the after show, Joey, because there's lots to talk about that we have to hash out. So, yeah. Anything else you wanted to rhyme up before we sign off?
No. The price of Bitcoin in American dollars before it changes from your block clock, $19,586 USD. Is that a six or an eight at the end?
It's a six.
There we go.
Yeah, 86. So Canadian is 26,854. So he went up slightly. Not too bad. So, yeah, with that being said, thank you very much for coming to our show. Wednesday, we'll be talking to
Ron Butler. I'll pull up the calendar after the show. We can talk about the other guests we have coming up. But Ron Butler's Wednesday, it's going to be a heater. So tune in, 12 noon. Eastern.
Yeah, noon Eastern. Yeah, so there you go. So, yeah, thank you for coming out. We'll be talking in the after show. Stick around because still lots more to talk.
Yeah, God bless everybody.
Take care.